Welcome to SEC Sports Roundtable, episode 136, week 2 in the SEC, recorded Wednesday, September 10th, 2014. Tonight, the Roundtable finds a way to fill up a podcast full of conversation, even with the lineup of games that was played last Saturday. Listen as Shane Bailey is joined by Blair Smiley and Nick Thomas as they look at what week 2 showed them and what is in store for week 3's matchups that include Georgia at South Carolina, Kentucky at Florida, and Tennessee traveling to Norman, Oklahoma to face the fourth-ranked Sooners. All this and more on tonight's SEC SRT. Welcome to SEC Sports Roundtable. This is your host, Shane Bailey. Back for week 2 in SEC action. We have a couple of new, well, somewhat fairly new. You've already been on once, so you're not new anymore. And then a pretty much a regular joining me tonight to take a look at what we had last week and take a look at what we have coming forward with week 2 in the SEC. We're pretty much understand that last week's games we're going to go over pretty quick. Because of what they're, sorry, I was being asked questions visually by my wife. So sorry for that disruption. Thought she was looking for something else. We can totally understand that last week there's not a lot to talk about in certain areas. And so we're not going to spend a lot of time on certain games and other games. I know, like, Nick, we're going to say welcome. Get that introduction out of the way. There's certain games you would like to forget about as well.
Actually, two recent games I'd like to forget about, Shane, but thanks for pointing that out.
No problem. Nick is a Vanderbilt guy, so those that do not know awesome. That now know why we are, why he's not excited about this season all of a sudden. And Blair Smiley's back with us. Blair, welcome.
It's good to be back, Shane.
Well, I can tell you that doing one of these from a hotel room in Memphis is difficult.
Isn't doing anything from Memphis difficult?
Maybe that's it. Maybe it wasn't the hotel or the podcast. Maybe it was, no, Memphis for me has not been bad. I go down there quite a bit with work, and it's not been bad. I stay on that outer southeast ring, and it's all good for me. But we do this weekly. We look at the SEC. We look at things that happened last week. We look at things that are going to happen this week and talk about any stories of interest that have popped up in between the two of those. So we do this via Google Hangouts. So if you have G+ or Google+ or whatever way you want to look at that or YouTube, these video versions are posted up there for you. We also do an audio version. These are able to be seen on anywhere that you have an RSS feed, iTunes, Stitcher Radio, any RSS podcast feed is going to pick these up there, out there for them to pick up and redistribute for you. So we'd love for you to listen, subscribe, let us know what you think, and we're going to get right into the action and tell you that, you know, we're going to spend most of our time tonight talking about Alabama, Florida Atlantic last week.
Hey, at least both quarterbacks got to play.
Well, both quarterbacks got to play. It depends on what spread you look at. I saw one place out in Vegas had a spread of 42.
That's a lot of points.
That is a lot of points, but it's kind of funny that at 7 minutes and 49 seconds left to play in the game gets called due to weather, and it's 41-0.
Yeah.
How convenient.
But I also saw one at 40 and one at 40 and a half. So it was all over the board there. But those that had the 42 have to be hating that fact. I don't know what we really took from that game from an Alabama perspective. I think their defense was improved, getting some missing pieces back from week one. I think you saw some things put in play, but you also saw a team in Florida Atlantic that's not nearly as competitive as West Virginia. So it's hard to make correlations between those two things. I think these are tune-ups. I think Alabama is going to be okay. I think I don't think there's room to panic. And if you listen to Paul Feinbaum, there's folks out there calling for four losses today as I was driving in. And it's like, you know, I'm looking at the same schedule you are, and I don't know where you're getting this. But there are some losses out there on Alabama's schedule, and that it's quite possible that can happen. But their performance also dropped them a rank in the AP poll, did it not? Didn't they go from 2 to 3 just because they won and, didn't win big enough? You know, that's always funny to look at those type of things. Or is it because Oregon did so well? I mean, could look at it either
Oregon
way.
Oregon was impressive.
Oregon was impressive, yeah. But
and
now
that was against a much better opponent as well. So if you look at who they played, Michigan State, was that who they played?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that was a great game going into the third quarter. Of course, with that schedule, I think that's where the strength of schedule comes into play.
It does, but you know, you're punishing a team, and I'm not here to take up for Alabama, but you're punishing a team for not losing. I mean, you know, that's always one of the digs you get for these polls and some of the problems you have is, you know, Alabama lost a place and they didn't do anything they shouldn't have done. You know, you would expect them to beat Florida Atlantic by 40-some-odd points. And so doing so, and because Oregon played better, they got the reward of becoming the number two ranked team in the country.
Yeah, enough of Alabama.
How much of the Missouri-Toledo game did you see? That's another barn burner.
Well, you know, that one is actually supposed to be pretty close, and they actually went and, you know, kind of took clear care of them. Toledo's a pretty good ball club, so the fact that they, you know, kind of took them to the woodshed a little bit, because they won that one pretty handily, if I'm not mistaken. So I think it was a pretty impressive scenario. That was one of those upset possibilities, you know, pretty close line, I believe, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, I don't remember what the line was on that one. It was ended up being 49-24 was the final, 28-7 going into the half.
Yeah, I want to say that was under a 10-point spread, but I could be wrong. But
yeah, I didn't get to watch a lot of that game. Missouri pretty much took control of that and had that the whole way. Now, another game, what about Tennessee-Arkansas State? What did you take from that?
I took that they're going to have a hard time this week. I mean, I will give this to Tennessee fans. Tennessee. And I wasn't here for last week's call, so I don't know how you kind of wrap that one up. But for them to go into that first game against Utah State, which we can all say now that Utah State wasn't really as good as they were really kind of blown up to be. But for them to go and dominate that game the way that they did with the past 6 years' worth of history kind of riding on it to kind of take control of that, especially with the young players, I thought it was impressive to follow it back up. I think we had talked in our preseason projections that this would have been that we felt somewhat that Utah State was going to be a game that they were up for, that they could possibly turn. And then it was, hey, would they be able to bounce back and really take care of an Arkansas State team that they should take care of, or is it going to be a close ball game? And I think we kind of saw a little bit of both of that. So a little bit of a tougher opponent, but that all changes this week.
Nick, would you take anything?
Yeah, when, you know, as I'm no Tennessee Vol apologist as a Vanderbilt fan. However, what they're doing down there is quite impressive. You take the youth that they're displaying, and they're taking very pivotal points in the beginning part of their season, and they're starting a nice run, I think. I think if you look at how they're developing and the momentum they're gaining, certainly the Utah State game was a little bit, I won't say a trap, but they had a nice quarterback play that they were competing against, and they took him out of the game early with their defense. So what they're starting off with, I feel like they're really off to a good start, unfortunately. And what they did against Arkansas State, 34-19, it wasn't like they dominated that game down to the 5 minutes seem to be still in hand, not completely in hand for C. Arkansas State made a few key mistakes at the end of the game to take themselves out of consideration, but looking at it, Tennessee's off to a real nice start. They could have had a letdown last week against Arkansas State, and you know, unfortunately, going into this week with Oklahoma will be a nice litmus test for them moving forward.
Yeah, the number that jumps out at me is the fact that they had 45 rushes for 168 yards.
Yeah, they still struggle. Yeah.
That's a bad number. It wouldn't be a bad number this week, you know, if they could get that. You know, to carry the ball 45 times and only end up with 168 yards against an Arkansas State team that they did.
Right.
You know, they had the lead from pretty much the beginning of that game. So they should have been able to control the line of scrimmage, control the clock, and really had their way with Arkansas State. And to me, that's the most pressing thing from a Tennessee standpoint. And like you, I'm not an apologist, so I'm kind of glad that I see something that I can hang my hat on and say they've got struggles, because for everything else they have, that defense is really stepping up and playing strong. The offensive line is giving some good pass protection. It's not so much in the run protection, but you look at what they have coming up. You know, it's not going to get easier after Oklahoma. Don't they have a gauntlet coming up? I thought I had their schedule pulled up, and I didn't.
Yeah, they got Oklahoma, Florida, Georgia, I think, in the next three opponents, if I'm not mistaken.
So, yeah, I think you're right.
Something like that. So
here's their schedule. I've got it right here. I just clicked the wrong button. So they have Oklahoma, Georgia, Florida, and then they get a break with Chattanooga. So they've got a pretty good three-game stretch, especially the next two. We'll know Saturday what Florida really is when they get to face Kentucky. We'll talk about that here in a little bit. What you saw Saturday with one game from Florida, you know, that there's lots to be worried about from a Tennessee standpoint on that program. So from even though it's a good win, it's one that Tennessee fans had to have in their arsenal as on the win column. You know, that rushing number is going to really scare me if I were looking at what they would have coming up in the next few weeks.
Absolutely. I think if I'm a Tennessee fan, two positive things. One is the defense, how they're able to respond. But secondly, they're getting a little bit of consistent play out of Worley going forward. I think they have to have that to take the pressure off of the running game and the youth running game.
Blair, what were you going to say?
Nothing. I mean, I think Worley, I think what you're fixing to find out is what limitations are fixing to be. So he's the consistency that you need for the non-conference games, but going up against the top five teams, it's going to get ugly quick.
How do you and I don't know the answer to this. I'm going to just ask you guys. How do you give Worley the pass protection that O-line has given him and not be able to give any type of protection or open up lanes for the run game? I mean, because you got to look at those numbers. It's got to be pretty balanced, the number of times they ran the ball versus passed the ball.
It's just aggressiveness. It's a different mentality to run block than it is to pass block. It's also I didn't really pay attention to the game, so I don't know how quickly the ball's getting out, you know, how, you know, those types of things when you're throwing the football. You know, it's not like he's probably sitting back there for 6 seconds running deep routes. So, I mean, I think that's what it is.
Okay.
You know, it's funny you mentioned that on the rushing side of the equation. I'm looking at their rushing, their running backs, how they performed. And Hurd was averaging 3.6 yards a carry. Lane was at 4.2. But then Josh Smith had one attempt at 12 yards, averaging that 12 yards per attempt. So certainly that's even aided their average. And then certain, and that's not where it needs to be. So I'm anxious to see how they perform with that offensive line that's so young and how they're able to run this gauntlet with Oklahoma, Florida, Georgia going forward.
Yeah, that's the thing with Tennessee this week. So let's move on. Blair, you want to talk about your team going up against UAB?
Yeah, everybody's jumping off the cliff, but
that game was hard to find for me on the SEC network.
Well, it was on Fox Sports South.
That's why.
Yeah, it was kind of a random game at 1 o'clock.
Very good reason why I could never find that game.
Yeah,
that's like, all right, I got the alternate channel. At least on Comcast, I had alternate channels this week. Last week or the week before, Mississippi State went to the alternate channel, Comcast didn't even have them in Nashville. I couldn't even watch that game. I got stuck watching. I forgot what now. It was some kind of torture.
Arkansas and Auburn.
That's it.
Yeah.
In a rain delay.
Anyway, back to Mississippi State, UAB. I mean, if you catch up with that game, Mississippi State's defense gives up 438 yards passing on 16 completions. Give up a 88-yard touchdown pass, 81-yard touchdown pass, 75-yard touchdown pass. UAB has a new coach. They were terrible last year. Their first game, they ran for almost 400 yards on Troy and beat them 38-10. So pretty much the whole week, everybody said we needed to stop the run, which we did. They just decided to throw it over the top of us. Their corners weren't ready. But the problem, for me, it's just one of those things where the fan base is frustrated with Dan Mullen because he's continuing this early game rotation every possession with the quarterbacks. We have Dak Prescott. They've scored a touchdown in the second and third quarter on 10 of the 12 possessions he's been in there. The backup that they keep alternating has scored a touchdown one out of 10 possessions. And he keeps rotating them. So State fans are just frustrated because, Dan Mullen, I'd love to play poker with him sometimes because I think I'd own his house. Because he thinks he's a little bit smarter. He just kind of gets this whole, why not play Dak Prescott the first 2.5 quarters and then play your backup quarter in backup time for a quarter and a half? And just like every other team in America does, I don't understand that, but. If he
almost every team,
if he rotates this week, everybody's going to just lose their mind. But for Mississippi State, it was you're going to beat the crap out of Southern Miss, you're going to beat the crap out of UAB. You always have a non-conference game under Dan Mullen that we just don't play well. We kind of flirt with kind of disaster. Everybody assumed that would be the South Alabama game this coming up week because it's in Mobile. It's the first SEC school to go to Mobile, blah, blah, blah. They got a pretty decent team. So if we go down to South Alabama now that we got the scare at UAB and beat them 38-10, then we're all back to where we were at the beginning. So we'll see how it turns out this weekend, but a little very disappointing.
Now, who split reps with Dak back there as quarterback?
Damian Williams.
And is he a sophomore?
Yeah, he's the sophomore. Yeah, he was the freshman that started the Egg Bowl last year. And from all reports, Shane, he had a fantastic fall. So I can understand the Southern game where you reward the guy and give him some series. But it's completely stalled the momentum of the offense, and then they finally put Dak in the second, third quarter, and we blow him out, and it's over with.
And – maybe do you think part of that is not so much the poker face of Mullins, but the fact that let's get him some real game reps? Because if you go in and do mop-up duty late third quarter, fourth, what's that matter? Whereas if you're at least playing when there's something on the line at the beginning, even though it's a game you should easily be able to win late in the third and fourth quarter, at least it's meaningful reps that a quarterback's getting and some experience under the belt. Because Dak's gone after this year, right?
No, he's got next year.
He's got next year. Okay. Are you sure?
Yeah,
is he eligible for the draft?
Oh, he's eligible for the draft. He's not going to the draft.
Okay.
unless he wins a Heisman in some way, shape, or form.
Now, Blair, does the backup, does he have the same skill set that Dak has?
Yeah, I mean, he's a little bit smaller, but all the guys are going to be, this whole run threat, dual threat quarterback that runs what Mullen does. So we kind of got away from this pocket passer alternate type deal. But I think if the problem that we had is that they made a couple of plays. Next thing you know, you're a 2019 ball game with UAB when you could have, hey, I've given Damian a couple of possessions. Maybe I should hold off and not give him four in the first half. So we'll see.
All right, so we'll move on from getting you guys back off the ledge. I think things are going to be okay in Mississippi State. We'll look at Florida for just a second. I mean, 65-0 against Eastern Michigan. That's just some ridiculous offense.
Yeah. Well, I think going forward, last year that was what Muschamp was concerned about. He couldn't put points out. So that's a good sign for that program moving forward.
Yeah, I mean, 86 plays for 655 total yards. That's pretty efficient. It scares me a little bit. And Kentucky fans, we've got someone like JoJo Kemp on the team out there going out there on social media basically saying we're going to beat Florida. I'm glad he's so confident that he's going to do that. I think to some degree those remarks were taken out of context and meant for just a couple people in jest. But you got to be careful what you put out there because
your coach is furious.
Your coach is very furious. He let that be known today as well. That's a team you definitely don't want to give any fuel on the fire, especially since they're going down to Gainesville to play that game.
I think what we learned from this is some questions about the offense. We kind of had unanswered questions about Driscoll. We had unanswered questions about Kirk Roper and their offensive scheme. So they finally got to play a game. It was a terrible team, and they beat the crap out of them like they should have. So I like to see them this week against Kentucky, a little better competition, see what they look like.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to Saturday's game as well. We'll talk about Kentucky. They jumped out, scored a couple of good touchdowns early in the contest. They didn't have a couple of their players that suffered from ankle injuries week one. So, they were being a little precautionary there, I think, coming into that game. And I'm okay with that. It was Ohio that's a MAC team. You're expecting to be a little better performance, and I think the score showed that. It was 20-3 as a final. But Hurd is our number one, Kentucky's number one back, and he set out. I mean, I don't know if anybody saw somebody took a freeze frame of that picture of him in the end zone on his second TD run, and that's a pretty bad turn of an ankle. So I would rather see him set out against a team like Ohio and us not run the score up and be ready for Florida than not. I'm glad to see the defense not give up from a Kentucky standpoint. The week before, if you looked at the scores, late third, fourth quarter, all of a sudden you saw UT Martin start to get some success both running the ball and passing the ball and scoring, where you were looking to post a shutout. It slipped through the fingers pretty quick for Kentucky. You didn't see as much of that, at least in this Ohio game. That was encouraging to see the defense want to play all four quarters, because as you get into SEC play, you're going to need a defense that's going to be there and step up. You're also getting a lot of play from upperclassmen that's impressing you. You're not getting... you're not going to have to rely on some of this youth that Kentucky has. So you're seeing Stoops really come in there and start to develop these players. So nothing spectacular to take away from that game. You know, it's kind of like they did what they were supposed to do from a Kentucky standpoint, so I'm happy with that much. Another team, is there anything you guys wanted to throw in there on that? Y'all probably didn't
want to. Yeah, Shane, for me, I'm looking at this, and 402 yards total offense, that's not too shabby when you had your running back sit out, you know, after the injury. But one thing I'm noticing is there's no turnovers, and I think as you start to build these basically preseason games with a team like Ohio, who does have somewhat of a threat, to make sure you stay with the fundamentals, and with zero turnovers, that's pretty efficient. And question for your quarterback, Towles, is that how you say it?
Tolles. Depends on who you ask, but yeah, Tolles. I like Towles.
If it's the French pronunciation.
It looks like Towles to me. It should be Towles, but I think he likes Tolles.
Towles, tomato. 17 to 31 for 170. So I'm wondering, are those passes downfield? Are they wide receiver screens? How much confidence do you have in him to throw the ball downfield?
He can throw it. He can hurl it if he has to. The week before against Martin, he had some really good long plays. From that standpoint, he's young. He's a redshirt sophomore. He played a couple games his freshman season, set out. They really spent that whole redshirt year retooling the way he throws the ball mechanic-wise. It was never a strength issue with him. It was mechanics. And you saw some vast improvements from what he was been able to put on the field, from just being fundamentally sound on the football field. He was always able to make good decisions, but you know, fundamentally, was he able to do those things? And that's where you've seen the improvement. So he's what, 6'5", 240, I'm trying to think. Wow. So he's got some height, got some size, and he's fast. I mean, he came from Fort Thomas up in Kentucky, Northern Kentucky, and from Kentucky standpoint, that's the football machine. Lots of guys have come through that high school. And, you know, when I was talking to a guy today that's from that area, and we were talking about him, and that's exactly, he said, when he was on the field as a quarterback, he was faster than almost every player on the field. So you don't have to worry about him from a speed perspective. He can get away. There's some escapability. He's got the arm strength. The question Kentucky has is, can you keep him healthy? You know, can that offensive line provide enough protection as they run the gauntlet of the SEC to keep that quarterback healthy? Because ideally what they're going to have is they're going to have him for 2 years. They'll be able to redshirt their freshman Barker, and then he'll get two more years to be able to heir apparent. So that's what you're really going to be able to get from that from a quarterbacking standpoint. But, you know, that the cards have to play right. We've got to look for a healthy quarterback all year round. So Arkansas, Nicholls State, do we need to say anything other than good job by the Razorbacks for them to score that many points?
Yeah, it's like 35-0 at the end of the first or something.
That's exactly right. Yeah. I mean, that's what you want to see from Arkansas. I mean, we said that there was a chance. I think when we did their podcast, we said there's a chance they could sneak up on some of the SEC. The way they've played these last two games, or at least the first half against Auburn and this game against Nicholls State, you know, there is that chance for them to sneak up and beat somebody in the SEC. Now, yeah, it's not going to be Alabama or LSU, but, you know, it's out there.
That's the thing. Are they going to be able to – if a team can handle the first wave of Arkansas then can Arkansas sustain it for the entire game? I think that's what we're going to see from Arkansas this year. So we want to see them put two of those halves together, and we'll see how that works out.
Yep. So
I'm anxious to see how the new coach from Wisconsin, how he gets acclimated in the second year. It's easy to put up that kind of points against a non-SEC opponent. However, when you come to the SEC gauntlet, which is known as the SEC West, how is he going to perform? Is he going to have the speed? Is he going to be able to do what it takes to be successful there? That makes you see how he does in year two.
Yes. No, I totally agree with that. Now, going down my list, unfortunately for you, Nick, I have Ole Miss as the next game to talk about.
Well, give me the Ole Miss perspective or the Vandy perspective?
Well, let's hear the Vanderbilt perspective.
Well, 167 yards of total offense. How does that sound?
I will tell you that my little 7-year-old daughter's soccer coach is like you, a huge Vanderbilt fan, and we're sitting there. Last night we had our first game, and after the game I go, Coach, I think our girl scored more than Vanderbilt did in two games.
Well, I wish we were like Blair and only had two quarterback system. However, we've got four going into the depth chart for this week. But, there's actually three pieces of the puzzle on this. One is the defense, one is the offense, and one is special teams. So with Mason running the defense, it's hard to tell if his defense is going to work, because they're still converting to the 3-4.
That's my question. While you're talking about the defense, it looks like they're having trouble adjusting to that 3-4. Am I wrong in that?
Well, it's the same concern that I had when I came on the show a few weeks ago. Can those defensive ends make the transition to outside linebacker, and do they have the speed to keep up with the receivers they're covering or the running backs coming out of the backfield? And as of right now, it looks like no.
And that was our concern from the outside looking at Vanderbilt is can they truly – do they truly have the players to go to a 3-4 and learn a completely different system in an offseason and make it successful?
Well, I think it's more so along the concern of the speed, right? So not only are they adjusting the coverages what they're supposed to handle, but basically can they keep up with the speed of the game without thinking, or even with being able to do it without thinking, can they just keep up because they're moving people all around? Then in addition to that, we're really, really young. I think we had roughly 29 redshirt sophomores or younger playing this game. So we are really young, we're really inexperienced, and man, I tell you what, to boot, look at Ole Miss's offense and defense. They're going to cause a lot of problems for a lot of teams this year going forward.
Yeah, I think one of your problems is you're so predictable on offense. And Mace comes out this week and says that, hey, I just underestimated the quarterback position.
The cornerback.
No. The quarterback.
Quarterback, okay. That's like cornerback. He's defense. He should get that. Okay.
I just must have underestimated the quarterback position. So now I'm going to try fourth guy because that's probably going to be the answer. If you're a Vanderbilt fan right now, there's a lot to say to take a look at what James, a lot of people, you've kind of gone through this kind of James Frank lays, but there is something to the fact that he never took his foot off the pedal. He never allowed them to rest. He never allowed them. He built their momentum and built their confidence so that when they rolled into a game from a confident standpoint, so there's something to say with this kind of mentality that Franklin brought. You don't want to say after two games a guy's over his head, but he's a little bit over his head. And I'll go again to say that the worst thing, to top this whole freaking thing off, was moving the game to LP Field. And I don't understand how an SEC team can move this game to this,
and go to, hey, I want to play in front of 8,000 Ole Miss fans, but let's move to LP Field so I can play in front of 25,000. To release a game and go to your place, and it was a disaster. Supposedly at the game, LP Field did not staff it correctly. It took an hour to get in the stadium. It was just bogus. But anyway.
Well, I will tell you this, that from the LP perspective conversation, we walked in the north with literally no weight. And I'm not certain what went on the other end, but I've heard some utter horror stories.
Yeah.
As far as moving it to LP Field, here was my argument. Was obviously it's going to be 70% Ole Miss fans. But I didn't have a problem necessarily doing that if we could move our home game with Ole Miss to the Liberty Bowl. I thought that would be a good offsetting factor going forward, but it doesn't look like they're smart enough to do that. And that would simply give us a Memphis presence.
Yeah. That's not going to happen because Ole Miss, like every other SEC school, really, really protects the fact that they have a home field. go play Temple there. But I don't know, maybe if you're going to do it. But I just thought that was a poor move.
Well, I will say from this perspective that I thought it wouldn't be 70% Ole Miss fans. Looking at it when we were sitting there, it was about a 50-50, maybe 40-60 for Ole Miss fans, yeah. From my perspective.
The reason why is because half the Ole Miss fans were drunk on Broadway where I was.
They didn't.
You know, they're like,
there were a lot of empty seats.
Yeah. It was it's quite interesting. But, yeah, Vanderbilt's got issues, guys.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no way else to say it. I mean,
good news is you got a chance to write your ship.
You got to get more creative on offense, guys. I mean, it is not hard to defend them, and it is unimaginable. There is no, I don't even know the words to say. It's very vanilla. It's like, hey, I've got the 6'8", you know, Stanford tight end that I can freaking run up, you know, an 8-yard out and throw it to him. And, you know, I mean, and I've got Andrew Luck at quarterback. I mean, that's just not what's happening here. I don't get it. And you know, and the problem is, I mean, you got Carl Durrell.
Oh,
you know,
God.
Head coach at UCLA. I mean, he's an offensive guy. And it's just like it's just like I could sit there and go, I know what's going to happen here. You know, this isn't very, it's like watching eighth graders. I don't know.
Well, here's the problem. Here's if I could. I'm telling you, with Carl Durrell, he came from the pros with Houston last year. And apparently I read before we started this podcast that he was offered the Giants offensive coordinator position. Now, and accepted the Vandy job and said, now, I don't know how true that is. Maybe he interviewed it. Maybe he didn't get it. I don't know. But what we're finding is there's a number of problems with his play calling. The first drive of the game, we had Ralph Webb, who's a redshirt freshman, run up the gap, gaining 5-6 yards a pop. We turn into a 3rd and 3, and we go 2 passing situations. Why are we passing? Why are we not keeping the ball on the ground? The challenge is his substitution patterns, he's doing it like he's in the pros still. He's not getting our best players the ball in space and understanding that he doesn't have a quarterback that can throw an 8-yard out pattern, that can throw a 10-yard out pattern, that can throw the ball on a corner and get the ball where it needs to be when it needs to be there. He's simply out of touch, and the rumors around campus are that he's teaching them and training them as if they're pros. The big thing, the light bulb that went off for me when I was watching the game, was that Ole Miss went in and their quarterback lined up under center, saw what the defense was reading, and turned to the offensive coordinator on their sidelines to call the play based on the defense that we were in. And it looks like that under Dorrell's system, he's asking our quarterbacks to make the read of what defense they're in and do their own audibles. And, man, that's just nuts.
Yep. I agree.
It's going to be a long season, Nick. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's going to be really long.
So if you haven't seen it, there's a firederekmason.net that's already up and running. And so I'm sure they're looking for different reasons to get rid of Carl Durrell, because he wasn't loved at UCLA for his West Coast offense in the college game.
I can tell you all about a West Coast offense. Go look at Mississippi State in the 5 years of Kroom and Willie McCorvey. I feel your pain, man. It's like watching a barge. I mean, it doesn't move, because you're asking college kids to run a very sophisticated down-the-field West Coast offense that puts too much on a quarterback. You know, and especially at Mississippi State, you're not going to have bright kids. You're going to have more of – I mean, you're not. You're not going to have a guy – I mean, at Mississippi State, you're just not going to have – I mean, they haven't had a quarterback in 100 years until Dak Prescott showed up. You know, I mean, he's the smartest thing and best quarterback we've ever seen. But if you lined him up and made this athletic guy throw a West Coast offense, it's going to be a disaster. So it's just very tough. Yeah,
and that's one thing that Franklin did so well. He was able to get our best playmakers the ball in space. And Blair, to talk to your point, if you've got the best quarterbacks and slice spread, why don't we substitute him in with the guy behind him every other drive? That's a great idea.
Yeah,
it's going to
be a long year. But the other thing, I mean, on the flip side, guys, I mean, Ole Miss, you'd be pretty dominant on defense. You know, they're going to have playmakers. I think Bo Wallace, outside of the first half of Boise, last six quarters, pretty impressive.
Yeah.
So you kind of see where it goes from here. You know, I think that was a pretty easy deal. It's just kind of, you know, one of those things. It's like I was asking all the Ole Miss fans on Broadway down there, was, you know, you getting the good Bo or you getting the bad Bo? I think we all know that bad Bo creeps up every once in a while, talks to him on the shoulder, and it just goes all bad for about 13 minutes. And, you know, then he'll throw four picks. I mean, four touchdowns. So, you know, that's kind of the deal with Ole Miss.
Well, you know, if you look at Ole Miss, their great recruiting classes that started 2 years ago are really starting to kick in for their depth. So they're going to be a force to be with in that SEC West, and I'm anxious to see how they look against that stiff competition, and they're going to go through the gauntlet.
Yeah, I think Ole Miss and Alabama, we're just setting up the table for that showdown in about 3 weeks, which is a real test for both of those schools. So I think you might actually see game day in Oxford this year.
Oh.
I tweeted out, and tell me if I'm off base here, is Bo Wallace the Tony Romo of college football? Because you just never you never know what you're going to get with him. And I know you've got some friends that are big Cowboy fans, Nick. You know, Romo could turn around and throw five touchdowns in a matter of 6 minutes, or he could also give you four picks and blow the ball game. To me, that's what you get with Bo Wallace every time he hits the field. Because he totally forgot about his four picks he threw at against Boise State. And like you said, now he's rattled off six impressive quarters. But can that just flip on the dime? And Tony Romo, to me, has some of that too, because he can forget those mistakes and go back out and either do them again or throw out magic. So I just threw that out there, and I didn't know what anybody would thought of that kind of comparison.
Yeah, I mean, the thing with Bo is, I mean, he's a third-year starter. He's the most experienced quarterback, you know, in the SEC. And
game experience.
But, I mean, you're talking about, I mean, that, as an Ole Miss fan, after the Boise game, they were all worried. You know, his first three picks, I mean, two of them weren't even in the play. I mean, they weren't even reads. I mean, Freeze is like, we don't even know what he's looking at. That wasn't even part of the play. He threw it over there and he wasn't supposed to go there. So, what's a three-year starter doing that for? I don't know. So, we'll see how it works out.
All right, let's move on, because we're already 45 minutes in about week two in the SEC, if you can believe that. With that being said, Auburn took care of business against San Jose State. Anything impressive real quick that we need to discuss or talk about that game?
No. Absolutely not.
Texas A&M 73, Lamar 3. I think that speaks volumes right there.
Ridiculous. I tell you what, Texas A&M seems to be rolling right now. And I definitely think someone's offense has been underrated, because if he could have this quarterback pop in here and put up these kind of numbers, that dude is a heck of a coach.
Blair, you weren't here last week, so you know, we had to do a little eating a crow about Texas A&M. I wrote down a couple things from our podcast when we did our preview. If they do win, let's see what they say. If they do win 9 ball games, I'm going to be really scared for 2015, 2016.
Yeah.
You know, we need to start being scared about 2014, 2015. I think you said, can the offense be explosive enough to outscore the defense? The other one,
yeah, I think we still need to see more. I don't know, man. I think South Carolina is a lot worse than we thought they were. Texas A&M is better than they were, and they both played each other, and I think it exaggerated both sides. I don't think South Carolina is as terrible as they are and as they played, and I don't think Texas A&M is just ridiculous as they played. So I'm ready to see what 4, 5, 6 week looks like.
And my favorite is if A&M fans are waiting on the next Manziel to walk through the door, they'll be waiting a really long time.
Yeah. Well, believe me, there's no other Manziel walking through that door.
No, but Hill is very impressive.
He's been impressive.
So that's our A&M homage today. We'll see what happens as we look forward. But then LSU shut out Sam Houston State 56-0. And then that leaves us.
And by the way, I heard a crazy number that there was 38,000 Texas A&M students at the game on Saturday. That's student nuts. Section was 38,000 students.
That's more like than all the Ole Vandy Miss, fans combined.
That's more than Ole Miss and Mississippi State's, and Vanderbilt students. Golly. Well, I hate Texas A&M.
I think the challenge you're going to see with Texas A&M rolling like this, what's that going to do for Texas if they keep sliding?
Yeah,
and they've got their own problems right now.
Yeah, I mean it's called Charlie Strong getting everybody off the team, and I'm going to have an NFL roster. That's what it's called. It's called Sylvester Green. Let me kick off 30 times instead of 8 and make a point. You know, and then 4 years later, you don't have anybody to play.
Well, what's the Jimmy Johnson quote? You know, if. Gosh, his name, Troy Aikman, has fallen asleep in a film session. You're going to go over there and wake him up. You know, if it's your practice squad guy, he's off the team. You know, it's about picking your poison to make your point and not just blanketly doing something like that. All right, let's finish up last week and talk about South Carolina, East Carolina. Blair, you're saying that they're not as bad as we think they might be. Help me understand why.
Because my brother-in-law texts me that they probably will be able to keep people under 45 points and 600 yards of total offense. And the season after they lose to Georgia is all about Clemson. So, I don't know. I'm interested to see this weekend, because everything, you know, these games, man, they just swing. You don't know. I mean, we're still in week two. they're not as good as we thought they were. Dylan Thompson has struggled. Their defensive line can't get pressure. Their secondary is young. So if you can't get pressure and your secondary is young, you're going to get burned. So.
Yeah, the thing that South Carolina has going for them is they're in the SEC East, because they're going to get some downtime playing a few of our teams in the East this year where they can get their practice out, get the kinks out. So we'll see how that works out.
Yeah, well, I mean, you look at this game coming up, and we'll transition to that. We'll just talk about that one, to South Carolina, Georgia. You look at it, the line is only 6.
I know.
You know, shocking. So for as bad as we've seen South Carolina performing over the last 2 weeks, even though they won pretty well last week, you know, East Carolina was what, within 10? Is that right?
Yeah, 33-23.
Yeah.
In the final.
And so, and we talked about, there was a chance that East Carolina could give them a really tough game. But, you know, you look at that and then look at what Georgia did, how they dismantled Clemson in the second half, a week off, and it's still just a 6-point game. You know, it's the same thing as we were looking at, scratching our heads. It's like, where's Vegas getting this number? But, you know, they've got to know something we don't. And they're seeing something out of South Carolina that we're not. And so you're right. It is only week 3 getting ready to start. But if they get blown out.
And if you watch Georgia and South Carolina play the last 5 years, the game has very rarely gone the way you thought it was going to go. You know, I remember the year when Melvin Ingram – you know, runs a punt fake for a touchdown or something. There's like 70 points between the two teams, and it's supposed to be a defensive battle. So, I mean, it's just kind of a weird deal.
But now, if South Carolina does get blown out here, are you starting to be worried?
Oh yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Me. That's me too. That's where I am with that.
It could easily happen because Georgia. I mean, they had that one half. They didn't play well in the first, but they looked like a dominant in the second half. So we'll see how they bounce back.
Defense didn't look great. It looked okay in the first half. But offensively, they still looked pretty good. They had some success in the first half. I mean, they turned around and gave up some big plays defensively and on special teams in the first half. Nick, what were you wanting to say?
Wait, if they do get blown out, does that say more about South Carolina or about Georgia? And so going forward, you've got Pruitt as the new DC down in Georgia, moving up from Florida State. And I'm sure he's still getting acclimated to his talent and how he wants to call the game and how Mark Richt wants that to flow. But Georgia always seems to have one big letdown each year. So I'm anxious to see if it's against South Carolina or one of the other SEC East opponents.
I think it's going to be more telling for South Carolina than Georgia. I thought at the beginning of the season Georgia was a team in the East to beat. And so if they come in and they handle South Carolina, I think at that point I'm going to start to really consider that South Carolina wasn't as good as we thought they were going to be. And Georgia is. And then the tail's going to turn to Florida, and we'll look at the Florida-Kentucky game. And what do you have down there with Florida? Now, all of a sudden, they really do have the opportunity to be the dark horse in the East. Because as much as Tennessee fans think that they have that opportunity, they still don't have the run game to produce enough to get enough wins.
Tennessee doesn't have a freaking prayer to be a dark horse in anything.
I'm just telling you what they say.
They're almost as bad as Kentucky basketball fans.
I don't know about what you mean by that.
Ooh. Or Dallas Cowboy fans. How about that?
That I can understand. Now I get that relationship.
There you go.
We back ours up with national championships.
Is that game in the swamp?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, at 6:30, 7:30 down there. So it's going to be a night game at the swamp. So, I mean, that's really going to be the telltale. I mean, if all of a sudden – as good as Kentucky feels right now about the way we've played, if they go down to the swamp and just get destroyed and just get dismantled, and Florida looks like the Florida from 2 years ago, or the Florida from 5 years ago, or just pick a Florida team that was good. Now all of a sudden, you know, you're gonna start to say that if that happens and South Carolina gets blown out, well, they do have a legitimate shot to compete at that point. So that's
now, what's the line on that game, Shane?
On the Kentucky Florida? Florida's giving 18.
18.
I know. But you have to look at Kentucky's past performances, like Blair was saying, against Florida. It's not been pretty lately. It's not been close. So they expect it to be a pretty high-scoring affair. The over-under's 50, 50 and a half. So it's
I like the direction Stoops has that team moving. I'd be shocked if it ended up being a 17 and a half spread.
I think it's going to be closer than that too. I couldn't sit here and say Kentucky's going to win that game. That would be hard for me to sit here and say, but I think that line's going to be a lot closer than that. And if it's not, then I'm going to be back on Kentucky saying they're not as good as I thought they were, and Florida is much better than I thought they were, and I really don't want to have that conversation next week. let's see if there's any of these we can go through pretty quick. Louisiana Monroe at LSU. I don't think there's any reason to talk about that game. Nothing.
No.
Southern Miss at Alabama.
That's going to be a disaster.
Yeah.
Alabama's
is like really bad.
Alabama's giving 48. So
yeah, and we beat them 49-0.
Wow.
Let's see. Did I say A&M and Rice?
No.
A&M's giving 31.5. Don't think any problems there. One game of note: Oklahoma is giving 20.5 to Tennessee.
Who covers?
Oklahoma.
Yeah. I think y'all, boy, that offensive line is fixing to go into a complete nightmare on Saturday, because that defensive line for Oklahoma is no.
Well, you've got the youth from UT that's going out for their first road game, and it's going to be an environment like Oklahoma against a team like Oklahoma. It's going to be a very slippery slope. I think it gets ugly pretty quick.
Yeah, and you look at what Oklahoma has. I mean, you know, they got that win against Alabama last year in the bowl game. You've got that Stoops over there, and his conversations about what the SEC's produced, and he's talked about how bad the bottom half of the SEC can be. Well, this is his chance to prove that.
Yeah.
On national television in front of on ABC at 8 o'clock at Eastern time. So if he gets a chance to, like James Franklin does, like you said, put the foot to the pedal and not let off, that's what he's going to do, both offensively and defensively against Tennessee. And Tennessee's going to have to be prepared for that.
And Tennessee is going there without Von Pearson, which I would think is one of the top three playmakers they have on offense. Yeah, I think Tennessee can make some play, but I think that defensive line, I mean, they can't run the ball on bad teams. They're sure as heck not going to run it on a top four team.
Yeah, and that was my last bullet, was they're the number fourth team in the country. They need a statement game against an SEC program, no matter who it is, because at the end of the day, everybody talks about the SEC. So, I mean, that's why we do this podcast, and so – They're not going to have as many opportunities to have those kind of bragging rights, so they're going to have to take full advantage of that. As we move on, I don't think there's any reason to really give a lot of conversation to Ole Miss and UL Lafayette. Is there? Am I missing something with those guys? We lost Blair, our Mississippi, Louisiana guy. I don't think so there. One game that is kind of interesting to me is the Arkansas-Texas Tech game.
Oh, that will be interesting. What's the spread on that, you know?
Two. Texas Tech is getting two. Or is giving two.
Okay.
And that's,
that could be a really interesting matchup going forward. Texas Tech always seems to surprise some people at home, and I don't think this will be any different.
Yeah, and Kingsbury's got that program moving. Arkansas, by all indications, has turned a small corner. Does Brett Bielema have that program playing the ball that we're seeing from last week in the first half of Auburn? If he is, there's a good chance that they could come and go to Texas and upset them.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting to see how it plays out. I'll tell you that. That's going to be one game to watch.
Yeah. Another game, I don't think Missouri's going to have an issue with this game with them, but UCF, they're only giving 10 to UCF. That program, you don't know what you're going to get coming into Columbia, Missouri. And that Missouri program is really starting to come in its own. They get neglected. They don't get a lot of love in the SEC, even still winning the SEC East. So I think it's a good opportunity for Missouri. And UCF only had one game. They must have got rained out last week or something as well. So
yeah, I'm anxious to see how Missouri plays out this year. The first year they struggled. Of course, they had some major quarterback injuries. Last year they won the SEC East. So this is going to be a real telltale sign for them to see if last year was a fluke.
Yeah. Now, while we're looking, I think give Blair a minute to try to get back. What about Vanderbilt, Massachusetts? Is there anything that you need to be worried about, or you think they're going to?
Well, first of all, what you need to know is the spread is 17. Vanderbilt minus 17. It's hard for me to pull out every dollar I have and bet against Vanderbilt in this situation. We have yet to score an offensive touchdown. We have 3 points put up by the offense year to date. And frankly, last year we played them up in Massachusetts, and it was the game went to the last quarter, and I think we won by 7 or by 10. They gave us a really good game last year. I don't have any confidence in this game whatsoever, and this could get really out of hand for Mason and his staff and could move up some decisions made by the athletic director or pressure, or even force a statement of sorts after this game.
Wow, that's strong. Now, where was that game last year? Was that held at Gillette Stadium? There's another program that played. Vanderbilt went and played in another NFL arena.
Well, we're big time, Shane. That's what we do. We like to play at big stadiums like that and leave them 20% full.
And then South Alabama is getting 14 against Mississippi State. I don't think Mississippi State will have any problems with them. Blair's dropped off. Something's happened to his connection, but I don't see a Mississippi State fan need to be worried at this point. The way Mullins did his quarterbacks, you know, he's just testing out quarterbacks in my opinion. Yeah. I don't think there's a reason to be worried there.
No, I agree with you. And I think that going forward, he's probably going to continue to test him until he gets into a real game. And then that's just going to give the opposing team something to have to prepare for.
Now, on a quick separate subject, we'll go back to a Vanderbilt theme for just a second. Is it everything James Franklin touch just turned to gold?
Apparently so.
I mean, he goes to Penn State, and it's like, you know what? James Franklin's here. Why don't we just waive all these penalties we've given you? You don't have to worry about those anymore. Go play a bowl game this year. Hey, why don't you get all your scholarships back?
Well, he is just one lucky guy. Now, we'll tell you from the Mason perspective, there was an interesting article today comparing Mason to Franklin and how Franklin won with all of the recruits from Bobby Johnson era, and how when he walked into a great locker room that was filled with juniors and seniors. And so that helped the transition a lot more than people recognize. And so
Bobby Johnson got lambasted for having a really good program at the end.
He really did.
Yeah.
And if the problem was he walked away in the summer unannounced, you know, there was no idea that he was going to go. And so when he left, that we walked in with James with Caldwell, and man, that was another dumpster fire year that led to the Franklin hire. But Franklin walked into a situation with veteran players, and unfortunately, the highly talented group of players that Mason is working with now, they're all redshirt freshmen and sophomores.
Yeah, they've not had any time. I mean, that's the one thing that we talked about on the previews is that Vanderbilt's got all this talent that's been redshirted, that Franklin redshirted. But the one thing that we never talked about is they were redshirted. They don't have game experience. That's a whole other thing. Is you can be filled with 4 and 5 star, in Vanderbilt's case, 3 and 4 star players.
Right.
But if you've never been on the field and you've not experienced that, there's something to be said for that, and we've not given enough credit to that.
No, I agree with you, and I think that as it sits right now, they're highly talented, but they don't know the system. It's a new system, it's a complicated system, it's a transition from the way the defense has probably played since they were in Pop Warner ball, and they're having to learn it on the go in the SEC. And at this point, 2 games in, people are calling for Mason's head. In my mind, it's very premature to make a change because of all the transition going on. But certainly we've got to have a simplified system that brings the talent out and lets the players display the talent that they bring to the table and not try to just fit our players into a system that is far too complex.
Yeah, I listened on talk radio today, and I think it was today, one of these days this week, it all runs together. And I've been a Vanderbilt fan for 50 years. And this is the worst Vanderbilt team I've ever seen. I'm sitting there going, how blind are you? They might not have had good performances, but from a talent perspective, you've never been this deep at Vanderbilt. There's lots of things still to be excited about with the black and gold. Unfortunately, it's not the product that you're putting on the field the last 2 weeks. But to say that this is the worst Vanderbilt program they've ever seen – and they've been a lifelong Vanderbilt fan, and they're in their 60s. Well, what's happened is Alzheimer's has kicked in because they're idiots.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and the thing that drives me nuts as a Vandy fan, don't introduce yourself as John, and I've been a Vandy fan since 1971. I don't care how long you've been a Vandy fan, right? I don't care how many years you've suffered. The point is we're here. We're in the situation with a new coach, and hopefully he can right this ship. This is a dream job for him. It's a tall order for any coach, much less a guy that is new to head coaching and learning the ropes and how he wants to identify himself. And so we'll see if he can, one, make the changes that needs to be made to put a win on the short term and yet build the program the way he wants to build it in the long run. So we'll see.
Yeah, I think he got a little bit in over his head. The water was a little deeper than he thought. But the thing is, doesn't mean he can't swim. Everything in this world is we've got to have it yesterday, and sometimes that just can't happen. Lots of things fell in place, and I was being a little facetious with Franklin. I think the Penn State, the kids up there, actually deserve to get the chance to go play in a bowl game, and I think they deserve the opportunity to get some scholarships back. Those kids are getting punished for something that a very bad man did, and some people let happen up there, and they were getting the punishment for that. So I'm fine with Franklin getting that back. I also like the fact that this gives them an opportunity to beat Ohio State this year. And
yes.
And now all of a sudden they're ahead of Ohio State. That also makes me happy. But you mentioned there were lots of positive things that happened to fall in place for Franklin when he came to Vanderbilt too, that helped him. I don't think he changed the format, the way they lined up, the way they played offense and the way they played defense wasn't a drastic change. Now, there was a mindset change in the way they attacked football. But from a scheme standpoint, I mean, it's not like this year where you're completely changing your defensive scheme.
Right.
He didn't do some of those type of things, unless I'm missing something there with Franklin. So to sit there and say, blindly say that this is the worst program that Vanderbilt's ever put on the field, just ridiculous.
No, I agree with you. And I think that when you talk about Franklin, you talk about a guy that could motivate. One, he was a master motivator, and he could promote the program, which you have to have at Vanderbilt. But secondly, what he was really good at was giving players an opportunity to do what they do best in the best possible situation. He was great with matchups. And right now, with Dorrell coming back from the NFL, I don't think he's realized that yet. I don't think he's realized, one, what each player's talents are and how they can bring value to the team. and how what the urgency is in college football to put them in those situations on the matchup side of the equation. And so I think as we sit here looking at an 0-2, a disastrous start to the season, if Vandy ever wants to get to the place where they can beat Tennessee when Tennessee's not having a terrible year, or they can beat Florida when Florida's not having a terrible year, then we've got to make some fundamental changes. And I think that's what Mason's trying to do. The question mark is, can he do it, and is he the guy? But I think we've got to go down this road for a massive overhaul on the offense and the defensive side of the ball to get there.
I just need it to happen after week 5.
I don't see any challenge with that, quite frankly.
Because you have Kentucky coming up September 27th. And
I think it's in Kentucky, if I'm not mistaken.
It is. And I had at the beginning of the season, I had Vanderbilt had a really good chance to win that game. So I hope they turn the season around. I just hope it happens September 28th.
Candidly, barring any injury on the Wildcat front, I don't think you have anything to worry about.
So, guys, we appreciate you listening to this podcast. We got to get a little more perspective from Vanderbilt, so we thank Nick for hanging in there and doing that. That's been fun.
Thank you for having me.
Well, we're glad you're able to do it. And with that, we are going to call this podcast done.